Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's Weekly Call. Today is Monday, November 26, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John. Let me see if I can get rid of a few things here. Okay, yeah, Gospel of John, picking up in chapter 5, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed, and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed, and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed, and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus, and sought to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth, and he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. For as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son, that all men should honour the Son, even as they honour the Father. He that honoureth not the Son, honoureth not the Father which hath sent him. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself. And hath given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming, in the which all that are in the graves shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that beareth witness of me, and I know that the witness which he witnesseth of me is true. Ye sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth. But I receive not testimony from man, but these things I say, be saved. He was a burning and a shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in his light. But I have greater witness than that of John. For the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works that I do bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself which hath sent me hath borne witness of me. Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape, and ye have not his word abiding in you. For whom he hath sent, him ye believe not. Search the Scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. And ye will not come to me that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye received me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words?
All right, the queue is open if anybody wants to get into the queue. It's a star 6 and a 1. And if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button there to click on to get into the queue. So if anybody has any questions or comments or any corrections to offer us here, again, star 6 and a 1. Terry, I see Jan's not here tonight. Do you have any questions for us or any announcements?
Yes, I wasn't expecting to do this, but I will try my best.
Okay.
Okay. In a jury trial, when picking a jurist, is cross-examining the jurist by the attorneys representing the two parties common practice?
Yeah, as long as they're appropriate questions. So, you know, there are a lot of appropriate, inappropriate questions that are in the jury questionnaire. And I think we spoke about this last week or a couple of weeks ago. I think this question came up also. But in any event, the jury, matter of fact, they did a memorandum on this concerning the jury questionnaire for the federal courts. And it asks a lot of really strange questions, like if you own a weapon, if anybody in a house has a weapon, even if anybody in your family, I think, even goes that far. What news do you watch, Fox or CNN? And, you know, all these are inappropriate questions, and they're only meant for the sole purpose of stacking the jury. And but there is a process where lawyers get, or the people, if they're taking care of their own business, gets to question the potential jurist to accept them or not. But they have to be very careful with the kind of questions that they ask. They can't ask them anything that would put them in a position so that the jury can be stacked into someone's favor. But yeah, it does go back in history quite some time.
Okay. Why would the court be so insistent on me getting started on my classes as part of my probation terms, especially since I'm on mandatory 4 years probation and case is still pending appeal? The judge and DA have been trying to tell me to start my classes. If I don't, I would do the suspended 87 days in jail.
What kind of classes do they say? Is this something for...
He doesn't say.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know why that would... I don't know what kind of classes there would be concerning. So I really can't really say much about that.
Okay. Anne asks, hello, can you please look at this law, 31 U.S.C. Section 3124? Does this mean that the states such as the state of Iowa, state of Michigan, etc., can't impose an income tax because it is exempt by federal law?
Well, I don't know the code. And is that a federal code, or are they talking about...
Yeah, 31 U.S.C. Section 3124.
3124. Well, 31 U.S.C.
Yeah.
24.
3124.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that. Maybe that question could come up again next week. And
I'll hold it for next week. Yeah. And then it goes on. Obligations of the United States are defined given at 18 U.S.C. Section 8. When I work, I am given Federal Reserve notes for my services. There are obligations of the United States. The exceptions are 1. Tax imposed by on corporations, 2. Estate and inheritance tax. Income tax is not excluded from the exemption. Maybe I am misreading this, but also look at Section 3124B, which I believe says Section A doesn't apply if you work for the government or an agency of the government. I work in the private sector, therefore Section A does not apply to me. How do you interpret these two statutes, 31 U.S.C. Section A and B? Thank you.
Yeah, well, again, it probably does say that. They try to say things in strange ways, so it's hard to understand. But it won't be applied in a court, even if you can show that it's saying that you are not liable for paying certain taxes. But anytime you're paying a tax on anything you own, well, obviously you don't own it anymore, do you? Someone else seems to own it. The Constitution is clear. We don't need a law to tell us about taxes one way or another, and any law that requires us to pay these taxes is null and void because it's repugnant to the Constitution. We read in, let's see, what is this, Article 1. Okay, Article 1, and this would be in Section 9, 1, 2, 3, Clause 4. It says, no captation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. So they can't put a captation tax or what's called a direct tax, and a direct tax is an income tax, a house on your property, a tax on an inheritance, an estate. All those are unlawful right there according to the Constitution. Now, the only way that they can put a captation tax on is by accounting to the census. And they can decide, well, okay, we've got so many people in the United States and we want X amount of dollars for the head of each individual across the whole United States. So each state would take that count and figure out what the tax would be. And it would be up to the state to pay the tax, the captation tax, on the individual. It can't be a direct tax because... Any tax that can't be avoided is unlawful, and so the state would pay the tax, and of course they would collect that revenue, usually or probably, and I'm sure there's a few different ways they could. Well, there are quite a few different ways they could do it, but one of the major ways, of course, is sales tax. I know here in I think in my county it's 8.25% last time if I remember, but in any event, that's a lawful tax. And you can avoid it by not buying things that are taxable. Food is not taxable. Clothing should not be taxable, although many states, they do tax it. I know Pennsylvania doesn't tax it. I'm sure there's other states, but I'm only aware of Pennsylvania. New York does tax clothing. But here in New York, there's a game going on. I've noticed recently when I go shopping for food that they've been charging taxes on certain things that they never charged tax on before. That's unlawful. They also have a thing here in New York where you have to pay, it used to be a nickel, but now it's a dime. I don't know if this is going on anyplace else, but here in New York you pay 10 cents for every paper bag that you use. That's a tax on food. If you're shopping for food and you put them into a paper bag, then and you tax 10 cents for each bag you use, charge 10 cents, that's a tax. I've often thought about challenging that and suing, but, you know, it's probably, I get other things to do other than that. 10 cents a bag is a problem for people, though, especially poor people. But in any event, taxes, again, in anything that's direct is unlawful, constitutional-wise. And that's why Trump is going to get rid of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is not federal, and it doesn't reserve anything. It just holds our debt. The dollar bill that they give, the note, is really a debt note. And whoever holds the most notes at the end of the day when everything collapses is the biggest loser. And I know I've talked to some people who think, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they think that, well, they get around this because they own the Federal Reserve note. And by owning the Federal Reserve note, they're able to tax you on that. Of course, the whole thing's a fraud anyway, so no matter how you go about it, it's a fraud. But anyway, I guess next question.
Okay, Kenneth just said, where is a de jure sheriff?
Well, you know, it's hard to find. Again, very few sheriffs, even some good sheriffs, they don't know enough of the law, and therefore they're problematic. And so they're as dumb as we are or were, and they need to be educated. We the people have to require that they take a proper education in order to become a sheriff, just like they have to have certain background in, you know, in, as far as law enforcement is concerned. And so there's certain things that they have to, I guess, you know, be qualified in order to be that sheriff. I mean, they're elected, so they got to go through qualifications if they haven't already done that beforehand. But they should be required. I think every elected individual should be required to take a course on the common law. As a matter of fact, we do offer our course free of charge to sheriffs. So if sheriffs come out here and they come to education, starts here button, and they come down to our course, Court Access in the Common Law, which will teach them a lot about the common law, and due process, which they should understand better than what they do know. So they can have that. Them and the sheriffs and their deputies can take this for free. I am trying to get the word out and teaching people. We put it in the handbooks. I don't think we put it in the handbooks yet because that was kind of prematurely done before the courses were done. But we are putting the word out to people who are doing the committees of safety that they should require that anyone that they're going to support for any election to any position, that they should come to National Liberty Alliance and take this common law course. And other courses. I mean, we got other courses that they probably should take too. But if they took this one course, I think they'd really understand a lot. Probably, you know, I'm sure there are some good sheriffs out there that are reasonably good in the law. We have Sheriff Dar out of Michigan. I forget what county he's out of. I don't know if you remember, Terry. But in any event,
Barry County.
Thank you. Okay, so he's out of Barry County now. I know he is one of the most constitutional sheriffs that I've ever met or had conversation with. But I know my sheriff, who passed away about a year ago now, and we have another sheriff in place. My sheriff originally, he was really good on the common law and understanding what his job was, although he lacked in certain areas because, again, you know, there's a big conflict between what they call civil law and common law, and everybody thinks we're under civil law, and that's why everybody goes into the courts and obediently without charge, challenging anything, the fact that they're in a civil law court, which has no power or authority over you unless you agree. Not that you're going to get out of it by denying the jurisdiction. You can make the argument, see where it could go, take it up to the federal level, and if you get a good judge, maybe you can win it, but that's really far and in between. But at some point in time, I think over the next few months, that has got to come to play. Matter of fact, I'm working on a paper right now that I'm thinking that I'm going to send out to all of the people that we sent our presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court, to which is about 40 people, 45 people. Of course, the Supreme Court justices received it. It was directed towards them, so it's a presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. But we copied about 30-some-odd people with that. And for the purpose of education and for the purpose of really trying to get some people who are in power, who do seem to be trying to save this nation, to try to get behind what we're doing. So I'm thinking of, again, putting a paper together that will focus in on this as far as the courts, the difference between the two courts, the difference between civil law and common law, and how they've used equity in order to really hide their civil law in. So, you know, equity is supposed to be just laws that are created by legislators in order to control commercial activities or illegal commercial activities, and also control government agents and their agencies and so on. So those are all legislative laws. Those are all lawful laws to be applied upon those individuals, but not to be applied upon the people. I know on the federal level they use particularly USC 18 and 28 to apply upon the people. Now those are, it's appropriate to apply them upon those people who are operating in those commercial or governmental agencies, but not upon the people. The only law that's supposed to be applied upon us is the law of God, God's law, which is called common law. And common law is written in the hearts of all men. That's what the Bible tells us. It's in the hearts of all men. And so we know the difference between right and wrong. And arguments and the rules of common law is as simple, really, as common sense. That's all it is. That which is right and just, common sense. So it doesn't get any more difficult than that. Again, there is a problem with repairing that part of the system, taking that back and bringing courts of law back. But we first have to define it. Matter of fact, what we do have, I've come to a conclusion that what we have in the United States here is what's called chancery courts. In Pennsylvania, they call them chancery courts, and they even call the judges chancellors. So that's pretty clear. And they're applying civil law that's written by their state representatives, which they followed suit after the federal government, but they've written certain law. It's called the municipality law, the law of the city. It's got a lot of different names, Roman law. And so they all followed suit to do the same thing, so they all have their civil laws going. Here in New York, for instance, they might call it a civil law court or a criminal court. And that's, again, a game, a word of games, playing games with the words. The bottom line is they're chancery courts, and chancery courts are unlawful. And that's where the judge is judge, jury, and executioner, so to speak. He makes all the decisions of one person. And that person is an elected individual or an appointed individual. They're a servant. It doesn't even, it's a biblical principle. I mean, that is a servant to tell the master. How can the servant judge the master? Of course they can't, but they do. And we let them do it because we're ignorant. We don't know any better. We've grown up in this kind of a situation, in this environment, and what's going on, what they've told us is. And so we just, sheep heading to the slaughter, ultimately. So people need to be educated. Without proper education, we can't have liberty. Liberty is found in the law, and so we have to really know the common law. We need to make sure we teach it to our children, and really, it's really learning due process, how the process of the court works. Again, common law is very, very simple. The heart tells you what's going on, what's right and wrong. The heart tells you if you're on a jury, what kind of a situation should take place on an individual who violated another individual. We should have an eye on restitution, not an eye on putting people in jail. Sometimes people need to be put in jail, but generally speaking, most people don't. You know, we have good technology that if we're concerned about a person trying to disappear from their, from what, you know, whatever the situation is, you know, we've got the technology to monitor them if that's necessary. But here, jailer seems to be everything. And even if they hit you with a fine, and let's say you did do a wrongdoing, and they hit you with a fine as well as put you in jail, and when they get that money, which I guess when you get out of jail, you'll have to pay that fine, whatever it is, unless you have it prior to that. But the bottom line is nothing goes to the victim. The victim's pulled into court to be a witness and then cast out into the streets. We don't need you no more. So we have a system that is really in bad shape that we have to really come to terms with and realize and make major changes to return back to common law. All right, next question.
Okay, this is a long one, John. My 14-year-old...
What happened to your voice, Terry?
Oh, she changed.
Good.
Sorry, I was late. My 14-year-old daughter is the sole title owner of a piece of property acquired for her in July 2015. There are four metal storage boxes on the land. The boxes are former trailers that you see behind big rigs on the highway. Last year, after 9 years of trailers resting on the land, the new local township code enforcement officer cited them, my 13-year-old, for one having more than one portable storage or dumpster per lot. Container size was larger than permitted. Having a portable storage unit without a permit. An accumulation of rubbish or garbage. There is no rubbish on the property. I presented a notice of special appearance, notice of motion of jurisdictional challenge, and verified jurisdictional challenge to the court enforcement officer and local magistrate at the hearing on May 6, 2014. The magistrate disregarded the documents and found my daughter guilty. I have appealed and have a de novo hearing this month. Next month. The jurisdictional challenge remains unanswered, however. That challenged the jurisdiction of the local magistrate and not the Common Pleas Court. Since I'm appealing to the Common Pleas Court, I'm not sure what, if anything, I should do regarding challenging jurisdiction. What must I do to be able to speak on behalf of my child? In Pennsylvania, juveniles may be tried as an adult if they commit murder. Should I push to have this heard in a juvenile court? I've identified 25 other unpermitted and unsightened containers in the township. The local magistrate would hear nothing of them. I would like a protection from abuse against the code enforcement officer, a cease and desist order from the township, an expungement for my daughter of the public record, and am considering pursuing a civil action against the officer for harassment. My daughter must attend or miss school to attend the hearings. Do you have any words of advice you can offer?
Well, it's really... How old did they say the child was? 12?
14.
14. And it's pretty strange that they try to pull a 14-year-old child into a court and try to play this game with them. Although we've heard of this before, or similar things of this before, they just don't care. They're just all about money. Well, I think they're planning on moving it into the state court. I presume this is in a town court. Is that what it seemed to have said, that they were thinking about doing that?
It was local magistrate that's going after him.
Yeah, but we don't know whether it's a town court or a city court or a village court or anything like that, or a county.
Well, he talks about juveniles can be tried as an adult. I can't tell from what he wrote.
Yeah.
Well, it says he's appearing to the Common Pleas Court.
Common Pleas, that's what I thought I heard, and I think the Common Pleas brings them into the state court. So they haven't appealed to the state court yet, Common Pleas Court. What state are they in? It sounds like Pennsylvania.
Sounds like Pennsylvania, yeah.
Okay, you're not going to get much place because even in Pennsylvania, they're called chancellors. I spoke about that. There's other states, I believe, that do the same thing. They call them chancellors, and it's a chancery court. So you're in a court that has nothing to do with common law So you have a jurisdictional problem. In that, you know, I had moved a case from the town court into the state court and won my case on the state court, on the state level, through a default because they couldn't respond, they couldn't answer. They're the one that dragged me into court, so it's not that they could throw me out for, you know, whatever reason they want to throw me out for, because they had actually pulled me into court on a, you know, some kind of a code violation. But I wouldn't be bothered in Pennsylvania to try to go to a state court to get justice. You can appeal it in order to just get more time, but time is so close right now. We're coming into December, and, you know, so if you move this into federal court for cause, the cause is denial of due process, and you can have them shut down through that process. It won't move or go anywhere until February, maybe. So it'll take a couple of months to get through that process. And hopefully by then, the federal courts will be in better shape than what they are now. But you can get some justice in federal courts on certain things. And I think maybe, you know, some of these, you know, you might get, even with the judges right now that we have in place, I think every federal judge, we're moving on trying to remove every single federal judge. You know, when our paperwork would that's pretty much what we put together in our paperwork, that to remove all the federal judges, because they're all guilty. I know Trump is moving to get rid of all the prosecutors. You know, so there are 94 federal districts, so there are 94, you know, attorney generals, and one for each district. And, of course, they have people working for them. And they're all appointed. So a reappointment to that would be great, and I believe that's what Trump is pushing for. I think the same thing needs to be done with the judges. But I do think, you know, we filed our papers going up to the Supreme Court, and, you know, whenever we filed anything going up there, they've always returned it within a week. And we filed our papers now going on 6 weeks, and we haven't heard anything back, so it looks like it's stuck. They've taken it to heart. Anybody wants to read those papers, they're on our front page right here. Just as soon as you come down just a couple of inches, presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. We filed it on 10/11/24, and it was filed by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And there were two doorkeepers that rejected our papers and sent them back. Actually, there was three doorkeepers, but two from the same district. And that was going to the district judges. And so we responded with a letter to them, and we copied everyone a copy of that letter also, so you can read that letter too. Anybody that's interested in law, you know, these two papers really would be an education. You know, reading papers by other people, especially common law, from a common law perspective, is an education. To learn to write, you really want to read other people's writings and see how writing is done. That's the only way that I know to really learn to write, you know, any kind of a court case papers. I think moving it to federal court for cause is the way to do it. We do have information on how to do that. I'm hoping that they filed it through a proper process. Not that it really had to be, because they make a big stink about things that are not necessary. But, you know, you try to remove all of the different hurdles and any of these closed doors, so to speak. You try to remove them as you're moving through the process. So we go through, you know, making sure that we do a file on demand, an appearance ticket, a notice of motion, and then the jurisdictional challenge with an affidavit. Now, moving to state court, and you can find that this information under Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then click on Court Forms and Process, and you'll come to this page. Now, there are instructions to challenge jurisdiction, which they said they already done that. And the next thing is to move to federal court for cause, which would be found right here. Here's the instructions for that, to move it to the federal court. But you got to be very careful. When you go to federal court, you're not there to argue the situation. You're there to argue the jurisdiction and the jurisdiction only. And the fact that your rights are being violated by a denial of due process. When you challenge jurisdiction, then you move that court to do something that they had to respond to through due process. Because they denied that, and they didn't have a hearing. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be heard and decided. Okay? Clearly, the individual who believes that they have jurisdiction can't do that. It's not up to the judge to make that decision. The judge has to rule on the papers before them. Whatever they feel or think is irrelevant. If you can lay out the law, and we do show how to lay out the law on this kind of a situation, once you lay that law out, the other side has got to rebut it. And if they don't rebut it, then they've defaulted. And if they defaulted, then the judge has no other, he can do nothing else but to throw the case out. And actually, the paper should prove to the judge also that he doesn't have jurisdiction. But I don't know whether it's just stubbornness and vindictiveness or many other things, I guess, in human nature to some degree. Or they really are so blinded by what they've been taught in law school through the bar and judge school through the bar. So they believe, I think they're true believers. A lot of them are. We call them useful idiots. These judges are useful idiots. And because they believe the lie and they execute and exercise that lie. But in any event, you've been denied due process when you challenge the jurisdiction. So the bottom line, and what we write up, is that you really want to, wherefore clause has to be when you move to federal court. Well, first of all, you can only talk about jurisdiction. Because again, if you put anything else in that paper, one iota of anything about what this case is about, they will cast it back out and not hear it. Because they can't make decisions on anything other than what is within their jurisdiction. And what is in their jurisdiction is when you have a denial of jurisdiction, which is a denial of a right, okay, then they must hear it. So those are the kind of cases. So in the wherefore clause, basically, again, you want to lay out the fact that you've been denied due process. You want to do everything in affidavit form. And then you want to make sure that when you put this paper together, of course you want to notarize. It's got to be affidavit form, as I mentioned. But your wherefore clause is the key. You want this particular court to cease and desist. We've written that language in the basic paperwork anyway, so you should see it there. But do you want them to cease and desist? That's what you want the federal court to do because they don't have the jurisdiction. They deny you due process. And for the denial of due process, that's an injury. You could look for maybe $1,000 in Morgan Silver dollars face value. That's a lot of money, by the way. $1,000 Morgan Silver dollars is worth a lot of money. I know right now, of course, silver is underpriced, but it is climbing up there. I think it went up to about $32 or something, I think I heard. Anybody know what silver is going for, an ounce of silver?
It was at 31.31, I saw yesterday. It had been up at the 32, but then it fell back, and gold did the same, but gold's climbing again. I'm sure silver is probably not far behind it. Hey, John, let me ask you this. I forget if you said or not, this most recent victory you had for this citation, the judge threatened you a bunch and stuff, but you did what you just spoke about. Did you put that up on the website?
No, but I will. I'll put that up there.
Wonderful. Thank you. How are you?
All right. But anyway, going back to this, as far as the value of silver, silver is way, way undervalued. There are some people that believe, and at some point in time, silver may actually go beyond the price of gold for a short period of time because there's not much of it around. I don't know how true that is, but in any event, the true ratio between silver and gold is $20 to an ounce of gold. So 20 silver dollars is 1 ounce of gold. So an ounce of gold is going for right now, what's that going for, about 2400, do you know, Eric?
No, it's at 27, I think. It's climbed up there.
Okay,
it had gone down to 25, but now it's up to 27, I think.
Okay, and it's still under, because the dollar right now is worth about a penny. That's about it when you really work it out. But in any event, the point is you know, for $1,000 in silver dollars, coins, I specifically write in there Morgan silver dollars face value, $1,000. And that's what I write in my paperwork. I didn't do it in this last case, but, you know, I just wanted to win the case. But in any event, and I took it into the state court. I never had to bring it up onto the federal level. But I would have taken it to the federal level if I couldn't get success in the state level. But they didn't really have much of a choice but to rule for me because they had defaulted. They didn't answer. They didn't respond. And so it was kind of a slam dunk. And they couldn't. They just did. What could they actually say to make what kind of an argument that the judge would have to, you know, make a decision on? There was nothing they could really make. No kind of a rebuttal. But so again, that's what I wrote up in the wherefore clause. Cease and desist, $1,000 for each denial of any right of due process, that's what I would do. And again, I think you'll be on the other side of things because I don't think this case will really hit the federal court. You want to drag your feet as much as you can. You want to get into January, February, really, when you get into the federal courts. And February, of course, is better. So on the other side of things, you might want to try to move it into the state court first and see if you can get anywhere with that. I don't think you will, but it's possible. I'm going to think about this on... I don't know that you want to argue the merits of the case in the state court. It doesn't make sense to do so. But again, you're only dealing with jurisdiction, so that's the key. Now, if the state court denies you that right of due process, now you have another person to sue. So when you go to sue the individuals in the lower court, which again I don't know if it's a town, city, village, or what, or even a county, then you move it into the state court. You're going to sue those individuals too, particularly, of course, the judge, because they're acting outside of their authority and ignoring the law. And so that'll do two things. First of all, it'll get you a bit more restitution to begin with, on the one hand. And on the other hand, it'll buy you more time. Because by the time it moves through the state court, it definitely won't be done until January. And then you can even go through an appeal, and then from there you can move it to federal court. So again, you have another thing to hang your hat on to as far as going after more individuals that's denying you due process. So I would suggest going through, if you're able to write these papers, and again, these papers are pretty much written for you, you just have to put your information and make it yours. I would go through the process, all of the processes on the lower courts in the state first, go to the state court and then the appeal, and then move it into the federal court. Again, mostly for time, because I do believe our courts are going to be cleaned up. But we don't know what's going to happen as far as what's going on in the world, what's going on in the United States, as far as, you know, this craziness that's happening. If something is going to happen. And I've mentioned this numerous times over the past month or so, brace for impact, because it's coming. What exactly it is, not too sure. Well, generally speaking, you know, it's going to be hell breaking loose in the streets. I do believe that in the major cities. And I do think, you know, and you can see right now we're very close to war, world war. And potentially nuclear war. So things might get a little scary and dicey. And there might even be a nuke blast somewhere, so who knows? Hopefully that's not the case. But the point that I'm trying to make is time, because, you know, Trump doesn't get in till the 20th, but I think there is a way he can get in earlier than that, because I believe he's always been the president. He was elected in 2020, and he's elected again in 2024. And desperate times calls for desperate measures, and I believe that's where we're at with this. And also, they are, you know, this president in there now is president of the United States, Inc., whereas, you know, Trump is president of the United States of America. You know, and that's proven by the fact of one who's obeying the law and one who isn't. You know, it's really that simple, cut and dry, ultimately. And the people believe, of course, that they've elected a president that'll come in that's lawful and take care of business representing them. So, anyway, that's what I suggest. Take it upline, but I would drag my feet because you want to push it past January 20th and maybe even beyond that. And going through this process will definitely pull you into February or March. And remember, while they're doing that, everything else in the lower cost, courts have to stop. You know, once you move it into another court, they can't do anything, and they're not supposed to do anything. So, anyway, any other questions?
Yes.
I was wanting to know if
John has reached out to Dave Champion for a possible interview. I have sent contact to him for over the last couple of weeks.
Well, I haven't. I think I spoke to Gerard about this, and he's had some things going on with him before. I don't know where we're at with that. I don't see him here tonight, so I'll have to ask him if he's made any headway with that or what. But I'm pretty sure that was the individual that Gerard had some business with in the past.
Hey, quick note, fellas. I just checked. Gold's at 26.26. It dropped again, and silver dropped again too. It's at 30.23. I yield.
Thank you.
Okay, next question then. I have been hearing some negative expectations and warnings about the upcoming tariffs. I ran into someone working in a department store stocking shelves, and the subject of tariffs had come up. I was told to purchase anything I need now, before the tariffs arrive and drive prices up. That was one source, and Dave Champion has a short video presentation cautioning viewers to be mindful of the possibility of consumer price increases to offset the tariffs, passing them on to the consumer. I don't know if anyone at NLA has heard similar, and if so, what is NLA's take on this matter?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it. If you got cash, I would change the cash into something else. I would change it into things, food particularly. Maybe get some silver. Silver is your best deal because it's cheapest and will be the most valuable at the end of the day when this whole thing is over. The Federal Reserve is going to be gone early in the year, probably February, March, maybe even sooner than that. Maybe the day he goes into office may happen right then and there. Federal Reserve's out. That's it. Done. You know, they're going to be cleaning up and, you know, getting, you know, all of the waste in government. I mean, goodness, probably 50%, probably about 70% of the people working in government is going to go. You know, it's going to be a huge, definitely over 50%. But the thing is we're going to go back to real money. What these tariffs will do will force these, really protect our goods and what we do as far as here in America. You know, they have a lot of things. They have cheap labor. They have maybe children laboring, especially China. Okay, they don't get paid very much, and then they ship their goods here. They copy and, you know, duplicate a lot of things that we've created, and they've duplicated. They bring it here, and they sell it, and they sell it cheap. And, yeah, it's a good deal. Inflation is heavy, so we kind of get, you know, addicted to buying cheap stuff. You know, made in China and various other places. So really what it's doing is really making the market even. But I wouldn't worry too much about it because it's not that you're not going to be able to afford these things because the money value will change. Okay? You know, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s. I became conscious of the value of money probably in the late 60s, maybe early 70s. I think it was probably early 70s. And what I found back then in the early 70s, that gold was $300 an ounce or $280 an ounce, somewhere around there. Yet things were very cheap still, okay? You know, we've already lost a huge value of our money going back into the 30s, 1930s and the 40s. We've lost a lot of value of money. But when I was a kid growing up in the 50s and 60s, not sure what gold and silver went for back in those days because, you know, I wasn't conscious of it. I should look it up. And as a matter of fact, I think I did do a paper on this, and I probably went through the different years. But in any event, I just don't remember. But the point I'm trying to make is this. What I would spend, what I would buy for a nickel cost you $2 or $3 today, maybe even $4 or $5, you know, literally. And you would get a lot more, okay? You know, I remember buying a 5-cent bag of potato chips. It probably was, or a 10-cent bag and a 25% bag. 25-cent bag was huge. And, you know, so a pizza pie, for instance, it cost $1.10. For a large pie, cheese pizza. You know, so I kind of remember those prices in the 60s, early 60s, well, right through the 60s anyway. And maybe mid to late 60s is when things started to go up because gold, I think, really started to make a bigger climb, which means we had more inflation. That's what inflation does. Once inflation is gone, okay, then money's going to be much more valuable. And you'll be able to buy the things that are necessity for a fair price, but it will prevent those who are using slave labor, so to speak, from profiting off of that. That's why we do have to do something with that. So I wouldn't worry about it, to be honest with you. I don't think, but again, you know, turn your money into something else. You know, a big thing that you can turn your money into, which is dollar for dollar, is coins, particularly half dollars. You can buy a box of halves for it's $500, and it's $500 face value of half dollars. Now, you may find some silver coins in there, some coins with silver, but, you know, the coin is a U.S., is U.S. money. You know, it's coined by the government, it's a U.S. coin. And the U.S. coin it follows the inflation. It doesn't matter what metal is inside that, although right now there's worthless metal. Probably the metal is probably worth more now than what it's being purchased for anyway. But in any event, it follows inflation. When inflation goes up, well, the face value of the coin remains the same for the dollar. If it goes down, it remains the same. So if it goes down, it becomes more powerful. If it goes up, it becomes more weaker. So the point is that U.S. coins are really backed by the United States government itself, and the United States government would have to go bankrupt for it to be worthless, but that's not going to happen, you know, really, because, again, there's a whole different thing going on with the Federal Reserve and the debt there. A lot of the debt, you know, there is some debt that we would have to be responsible for, but most of the debt is fraud anyway. The whole system is fraud. We didn't do that. Why should the people have to pay for anything? And when they really bring justice, which will be worldwide, it's not going to just be here in America. You know, once the deep state and the New World Order falls here in the United States, it falls around the world. And there are lots of countries that are working with Trump to take them down. So I know a lot of these people that are fleeing the country because of this thing with Diddy and maybe with what's that other guy with the island? Jeff Epstein. You know, with those two guys, you know, they think they could flee the government and, I mean, flee the nation here and go to England. Some of them gone to England and France, I hear, and other places. Well, they're going to be returned here, you know, if they're guilty of a crime, because they're going to, you know, extradite them, and most of the nations they're fleeing to are dealing with the same problem we have, the deep state. So justice will be served for those people. But nevertheless, you know, the bottom line, though, is the value of the money. The U.S. coin is going to have, I think the U.S. coin is going to have its full value without the inflation. And so $20 in coins is 1 ounce of gold, okay? in a world where there is no inflation. In other words, a world where gold and silver is the only form of money. So I don't think I'd worry too much about it. But again, right now, you want to save your dollars because, you know, maybe we'll be compensated for, you know, the Federal Reserve debt notes that we have because, again, money's going to be seized around the world. And these people that we're going to be bringing to justice control more than 80% of the entire worldwide market, you know. And so when you take all that money back, you know, America's not the only one that's going to benefit from that. You know, it's a worldwide thing. We've all suffered under the New World Order. I mean, America might get the lion's share, but nevertheless, you know, everybody has suffered around the world on this. So I do see that there's some kind of a compensation going on. You know, free energy is another thing that's going to come up. There's so many things that we should have had free energy a long time ago. It's going to be a whole new world. I don't think it's, and I think some of the people that don't realize what's going on, you know, I listen to a lot of people talk on the news, different conversations, people who know that there's something going on and know, trying to figure things out, but they really don't understand or maybe they're afraid to say anything. Maybe that's part of the thing too, because it's like they draw a blank when trying to really explain what's really going on behind the scene with all of these unlawful things and out of control government agencies, and you know, you got the FBI and the CIA and all these other three letter agencies just totally out of control. It's going to be a whole new world, whole new world. I mean, I still hear people saying, well, I wonder how Trump, can he get rid of the Federal Reserve, or, you know, how's he going to do it? It's very simple. Just apply the law. It doesn't take anything more than that. It's right there in the Constitution. Can't have it. All right, anyway, any other questions?
Yes. There is much talk about repealing the income tax. I can't see Congress easily letting go of the almighty dollar. What I heard that should be done is Trump or someone in the position to address this is to publicly make known the truth to whom the income tax is lawfully be imposed, such as those in the federal territories, and possessions such as Washington, D.C., Guam, and not the 50 states. There is nothing unlawful about that statement, since the Internal Revenue Code clearly defines in tax law, U.S. person, and taxpayer in section 7701. That would be transparent and helpful.
Well, it says that person's liable, and they define persons as a corporation. I mean, it's a whole game that they play there. But that's all USC 26 stuff anyway, which is totally irrelevant, unlawful, and is not law either. Even inside USC 26, it says it's not law. So it's not law. But that's irrelevant. The bottom line is the law of the land. The law of the land is the Constitution. The Constitution makes it clear. Anything that they do outside the 18 powers we gave them is null and void. Any agency that they've created, we didn't give them the power and the authority to do so, is null and void. Income tax is null and void. Federal Reserve is null and void. It's owned by, first of all, the federal banks. Is owned by foreign bankers. I mean, that in itself is unlawful. But the bottom line, as far as income tax is concerned, which I just spoke a lot about anyway, the bottom line brings us right back to the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 1, 2, 3, 4. No captation or direct tax shall be laid, period. Okay, so it's unlawful. So let's reinstate the Constitution and exercise it. It's that simple. And let's get rid of all the laws, you know, all of the legislation that's been legislated that's unlawful, all of these agencies that have no lawful right to be. Let's get rid of them. And that's what Trump is doing. If you pay attention, it's exactly what they're doing. So, anyway, next.
Okay, this is the last question. I am in search of some absolute proof. Where can I find it definitely stated in writing that a Pettit jury must convict unanimously or the defendant goes free? I hear an awful lot about how juries are convicting on majority vote, 9-3, for example. I would like some concrete resources of the aforementioned to prove the jury's unanimous integrity in issuing a verdict to those to whom might challenge me in a conversation about the jury and its importance in protecting the innocent. Does NLA have such literature on its website, or links for that matter?
Well, you could find some stuff in Brent's book, The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Allen Winters, and he does a good deep dive on the common law, the history of the common law. And the history of the jury is that it's got to be unanimous. If one person disagrees and can't find that person guilty, well, then they have to continue working this out until they can all agree. And there's no such thing as a hung jury. The judge should, who's not a judge, is a magistrate. Even if they are a judge, they're wearing a magistrate cap, then they're in a court of law. And if the jury comes back and says, well, you know, we're kind of stuck, we can't move, we got one or two people, this, that, or the other thing, well, that's tough luck, go back, we'll send dinner in for you and get you breakfast in the morning, but go back to work. They got to work out and come up with an end result. And if the end result is, well, we just can't, we're just going to have to say he's not innocent, he's not guilty, and come out and that's that. So when they sequester a jury, okay, that's unlawful. To try to find out how these individuals voted is unlawful, all right? And it's a game of control. It gets back to the same thing. But history shows it. I don't know that you will find it written down in any specific matter other than the fact recorded in history. And again, I suggest go get the book, Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Allen Winters, and you'll become highly educated on the common law process, the jury, the history of the jury, and so on and so forth.
That's
anything else?
Again, John, okay. There are no more questions.
All right, if anybody's got a question, comment, or correction, law for Star 6 and 1, if you're on an app or browser, Star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone, I'm sorry. And there should be a button there if you're on an app or browser to get into the queue. Okay, let's see what we have in the queue here. We got a couple of people in. So the first caller, let's see, is Doug from Tennessee. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Doug? John, this is... Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead, Doug.
Hello?
I got your name down as Doug from Tennessee. Is that where you're from?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, well, my question is more about the move for cause. In the court access recorded video course in Chapter 11B, there's case examples. I think there's a mention maybe of a 11C. I was wondering if I missed that somehow.
What is it that we're looking for? This is in 11C. So it would be in, Chapter 11, quick case examples. We got jurisdictional challenge, traffic court argument, jurisdiction challenge. We got the forms for affidavit of default, file and demand. What are you looking, what's the question? Are you there? Did I get kicked off or something? Can you hear me? Anybody hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay.
Doug's not responding for some reason.
Hello?
By the way, is that your name? Is your name Doug? Maybe we put the wrong name on you. Are you Doug from Tennessee, or what's your first name and state? ...7300-615 area.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. What exactly is your question? I'm looking at Chapter 11 right now for some case examples.
Yeah, I lost you there for a minute. I didn't know what happened.
Okay. So what exactly is your question?
Well, I've got a move for calls case, and and I was reviewing the court access recorded video course, and I think in chapter 11B case examples that there was a mention of maybe a possible 11C, and I was wondering, I was hoping to be able to find some more information on that.
Yeah, well, you know, I've updated this since I did the course. I'm not sure whether I actually updated the paperwork in the course itself. I'll have to look into that to make sure. But to get to the latest papers that I had written on this, you go to, on the blue tab, you highlight Education Starts Here, and come down to Law. And when you highlight Law, come over to Court Forms and Process. Now, I updated this with the latest forms. I'm not sure whether I updated it in the course, but I will at least do an addendum if I can't update it. But you'll find instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction, if that's what you're looking to do. We also have instructions, and this here has been updated also, instructions and forms for traffic court. But that would also be with any kind of a code violation, you know, because traffic violation is a code violation, so you can use it for any violation. But ultimately what it is a challenge of jurisdiction, because it's not a court of record. They don't have the power to fine or incarcerate, although they do fine and they do incarcerate. They don't really have that power, though. The only place that you can get that has that power is a court of record, okay? So, but in the instructions and forms for the traffic court, it works for all code violations. And what is very key, in order to not have an argument going up, because they will make this argument, you have to do an appearance ticket as if you're a lawyer, and you have to do a notice of motion, okay? And what you're doing is you write a verified jurisdictional challenge. They have to respond to that. Then, there's, of course, we have the information for the affidavit of default, because they will default on that. No one's going to respond. And then, for as far as moving that court into a federal court.
Well,
court,
in my case, I'm sorry. In my case, they did respond, but all they did was copy a bunch of statutes and threw them out there. And really, that, as far as I'm concerned, that's not an answer.
Well, that is true, because statutes don't trump the law. We're talking about the law. They're talking about civil.
You're breaking up a little bit, John, on my end.
Yeah. Well, statutes don't trump the law. You know, the law, of course, is the Constitution, and the law is the common law. And it doesn't trump that. Matter of fact, it's the reverse. So who responded? Is this a thing where is a prosecutor, or what is it that's, who's on the other side? Is this a code violation? You know, without getting into too much detail,
it would be the corporate city police.
Okay, so it's a code violation, though.
John, I don't know what it is. You're breaking up, and I really need to hear this.
Well, a couple of things. You know, first, I'm just trying to, you know, eventually get the information from you from what you can hear. And whatever you miss, you can come back and get the recording, you know,
yes,
tonight. The recording will be available, so the blank spots you'll be able to get anyway. So hopefully you're getting this part that I'm talking about now. But what kind of a violation is it? Is it a traffic infraction or some other kind of a code violation?
It's traffic. Yeah, it's license and registration.
Okay, so traffic. So traffic court is simple to write, in the sense that you can even show the fact that it is a commercial law. That's what it is. If you go look it up and get the list within your state. You're in Tennessee? What state are you in? What state are you in?
I missed all of that.
What state are you in?
Tennessee.
Tennessee, okay. Well, whatever you're missing, you'll get on the recording, okay? The recordings will be posted right after the program tonight, and we'll be posting video and also audio. But anybody interested in the audio, I'll show you where to find that in a minute. But again, if you're missing parts of what I'm saying and you're getting parts of it, just know you can go back and listen. If you've, I forget exactly where we were on the question here. So you said it's a code violation, it's traffic violation. So traffic violation is commercial code. Commercial code, you wouldn't operate in commercially, has nothing to do with you. You're under law, they're under statutes. And you wouldn't operate anything commercially, so it doesn't apply to you, so you challenge the jurisdiction. Now, when you challenge the jurisdiction, who answered? Was there a prosecutor there that answered with statutes?
The DA, the county DA.
And what statutes did he say? He just read the code, the commercial code?
He just printed off some statutes. And they're just TCA codes that, you know, they just said the jurisdiction of this and that. But
okay.
Well,
you're not going to argue or win that battle in that courtroom. You just got to challenge the jurisdiction of the court because they're operating on a commercial code. I mean, yeah, I would agree with the lawyer. Say, yeah, you're absolutely right. Those statutes do exist for anybody that's operating under commercial, you know, activity. And I'm not operating a vehicle like a taxi or transferring goods for a business or anything of that nature. I'm just traveling. And so that doesn't apply to me. So this court does not have personam jurisdiction. You have to be very clear. This court, and I would even tell him, yeah, I agree. This court does have subject matter jurisdiction, but they don't have personam jurisdiction over me, you know, personal jurisdiction. You don't have it over me. This is a court of equity. It's a court concerning commercial activities. And, if you want to try to come after me for something, you have to take me into a law court, but this stuff doesn't apply to me. So you see, what you're arguing is the jurisdiction. What did he bring up to say that he had jurisdiction?
Well, just printing out a bunch of statutes and throwing that as an answer.
Right, but what you need to do, though, is just when you throw out statutes like that, I mean, I'm sure you had time to look, and I presume he did it in writing, or did he read off statutes?
Gosh, this is really difficult. I'm just hearing pieces of what you're
saying. Did he read off statutes, or did he?
No. This was in writing. And
okay, so you respond back in writing. He would come up with statutes that say certain things, and I would go down his paperwork line by line. Agreed, 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 agreed. All the way down the line, I'd agree with everything they have to say concerning the statutes and the application of commercial violations upon people who are subject to that particular jurisdiction. I would agree all the way down the line, but then I would write, the problem is I agree you have subject, this court does have subject matter jurisdiction. I agree with that 100%. But you haven't said anything. You're talking to the lawyer here now, the prosecutor. You haven't said anything about personam jurisdiction. Where do you find personam jurisdiction over me? You don't have it. I'm not operating in commercial activity. This court does not have personam jurisdiction. And you may have to go in circles with this, but I wouldn't go in circles any more than just once.
They just ignore this and they just roll
wrong. That's why you got to move it. You got to move it up the line. You got to move it. I'd move it. You're in Tennessee. I'd move it into state court first, maybe, for cause and for denial of due process, and demand that this court cease and desist and find them $1,000. You know, you want to get restitution for violating your right of due process by dragging you into a court of jurisdiction unknown, has no jurisdiction over me. And so they're violating one of your rights, the right of due process, because they don't want to hear it. You had to move it into state court. And so, but you have to go after them personally. You got to be careful how you write this stuff up, because you see, you don't want to sue the court itself. You want to sue the individuals in the court that stepped outside of their authority and are applying and forcing things upon you that's unlawful. That's what you really have to get that mindset and realize that's what you're doing. And it's all about jurisdiction, and it's all about the denial of due process. Hijacking you into a court of jurisdictions unknown, ultimately. because they're not operating as a commercial court for commercial activities, obviously, because they're dragging you into it. All right, so you just have to understand that. You don't want to have to make those arguments. But with that understanding, that gives you a realization of how you need to write this. That's why you have to understand what they're doing, and you have to understand the due process. But again, you can go, I would take it into state court first, move it for cause to state court, and if you don't get anyone there, anywhere there, then you move it into the federal court for cause. But you just
It's already in state court.
Okay, so move it to federal court for cause, violating your right of due process.
Yes, sir. I don't know if you can hear me or not, but I've used your paperwork on the challenge there, and it's very well done, and that's what I used.
Okay, so then you've done everything correctly. You've done the appearance ticket and all that stuff, and then you.
Oh yes, yes, sir. I followed your instructions to the T there with notices and certified mail and all the.
Moving to federal court for cause is the last thing you can do. And with the way things are right now, by the time you get into federal court, most probably there'll be a lot of changes taking place in the federal court, which will be really good for us, of course, because we need to get back to the law.
Is there any suggestions or anything you can help me with on for it? Like, because there's federal rules of civil procedure there, and I think there's got to be a.
That has nothing to do.
A jurisdictional statement at the beginning of the move for cause to make sure you give the feds.
Right. If they have a rule and the rule passes the muster of common law, then I wouldn't make a big stink about it and I'd move along and accept that rule. But I don't accept their rules per se, okay, because their rules are self-serving and damaging to the people. And it is repugnant to the common law. And the common law requires its own rules, the rules of common law. And once man puts his mind into the common law, then he's mixing his mind with God's mind, and that doesn't work. That's oil and water, obviously. But you need to make your challenge. I'm writing a paper right now, and I'm planning on sending it out let me go back to the front page here. I mentioned this a little earlier. The presentment with the order to the United States Supreme Court, and we got a letter here. Again, read this because it'll give you a good education. There's a lot of memorandums in here. I didn't put memorandums in here, but I put information that I've written in my memorandums. I think it's 21 points, 21 problems in the federal court and the state courts that need to be addressed and corrected. Now, I'm writing a paper right now that makes it much clearer to identify the differences between the courts, okay? And once I get that paper done, and I think I'll get it done this week, if not before Thanksgiving, by the weekend, it'll probably be up by next Monday, probably. I'll put that paper either up here, if the paper is written and I want to send it in as an addendum to the presentment, or if not, I will put it on the page and education starts here under law, and then you come down to court forms and process, I'll put it here. Now, I may put it in both places anyway, okay? So I'll probably put it in both places. I'll put it on this page and the front page. And maybe that'll help you for what you want to do, because it really makes it very clear. It talks about the law. It talks about law, equity law, civil law, criminal law, and lays out the law of the land and what is lawful and what is not lawful. And I'm writing this paper in such a way that right now as I speak, if I've got, and I've got like, I don't know, 17, 18, I think 18 pages right now on it. And if I got 10 sentences that is not a quote of law, the United States Supreme Court, our founding fathers, I got a lot then. I don't think I have 10 sentences in there that I actually wrote. What I did was I've taken the language from our founding fathers, taken the language from the United States Supreme Court, taken the language of other Supreme Courts within the different states, things that come out of maxims and common law, and so it's all every sentence or every paragraph or whatever you want to, however you want to put it, depending on the writing, you know, has a footnote on it where that information comes from. So the point, what I'm trying to make is this. They're not going to be able to rebut the paper. The only thing they can do is ignore it. But if you can get into a court that actually will read your paper and apply the law, it's a slam dunk. That's the problem we have today. But again, you're coming in at the end anyway of all of these problems. So your case is going to get in. If you go to move it to federal court, it's probably not going to be heard until January or February anyway. And at that point, hopefully things will be back right side up again, because right now it's been upside down for a long time.
Yes, sir. I guess I'm going to have to go back and listen to the recordings here. Is before I went into the queue, I could hear you perfectly, but it's when I went into the queue, then it started messing up. So
I
can't really have a good conversation with you right now because of that, you know?
Yeah, that may just have been a coincidence. It could be also you're listening, and then when you're talking and then listening again, maybe there's a broadband problem on your end. I don't know. I don't know. Is anybody else having a problem hearing me? And when you go back and listen to the recording, you'll be able to get all this info.
No, I think he was cutting out, John. I didn't hear him, but
right,
I heard
him. You were talking to him, and he didn't respond numerous times. You're right. So, by the way, if you want to get this, if you come under today's issues on our blue bar here, and you come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos. We've been putting up these videos where I share my desktop. We've been doing this for quite some time now, so you can get, you know, tonight's open forum on a video. But also we have it under, if you go to Monday Night Call and you click on that, most people probably know this already, but for those who don't, you come down, these are the recordings of our programs. And tonight's program should probably be up. You're still doing it at night after the program, aren't you, Terry?
Yeah, it takes me about 10, 15 minutes, yeah. Sometimes less.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I put the video up, but it takes me maybe 15 or 20 minutes, or maybe a half hour because it's got to process to an hour. But I've been getting them up every night after the program. So anyway, you can go and listen there and get the full audio that you've been missing.
Okay, yes, sir. I'm familiar where those recordings are, and I'll review it probably first thing tomorrow. And
okay.
I do appreciate your time, and I appreciate what you and NLA is trying to do for America. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate that. And again, the paper that I'm putting together now, that, like I said, you know, by next Monday, it'll be up, and I'll probably make notes. I'll let everybody know that it's up there. But this paper that I'm writing that is going to be on the courts, the differences between the courts and the differences between the law and what authority they have or don't have. And who writes the law, all of that. If you read this paper, and like I said, if I recall, I probably have 16, 17, maybe 18 pages at this point. It's going to be probably reduced, but I don't know, maybe not. But the bottom line is this paper is a very valuable paper for anybody who wants to really understand the law, the difference between the courts, and the difference between the different laws. You know, there are 51 jurisdictions in Black's Law. I went through Black's Law trying to find all the jurisdictions. There are 51 of them. And of the 51 jurisdictions, only one of them is called law. Capital L-A-W. In law, at law, law. And law, all three of those mean the same thing. They're all synonymous. And the definition of that is that which proceeds according to the common law. And it is different from that which is municipality law, equity, and all the way through Roman law, Justinian law, Babylonian law. I think I mentioned law of the city or municipality law. All of that is different than law. And we're only under the law. And that's why this paper, it will really be so valuable. I have done some memorandums before on law, but I don't think I've done one that breaks down the differences between the courts. And that's the key to this particular memorandum. It'll deal with both the law and the courts, and where law comes from, where the authority of law comes from, which is key. And that's why they're not going to be able to rebut that memorandum. And you could take that memorandum and literally change it into a court case in itself. Just properly follow along with the paragraphs, and make it a court case. So it can be done pretty easily. But anyway, that'll be up there probably by next Monday. Okay, we're going to take our next caller. Let's see. We have FW. Oh, how you doing?
Hello. So, I have two questions. I'm blanking on the second one, but the first one is, you've talked a lot about basically trying to hang in there and postpone things until maybe January, February, especially if you can get things into federal court, in the hopes that by then Trump will have made, I remember the second one was about someone he's appointed to some economic position, which I do want to ask about. So about getting into the federal courts, because he's making changes there and maybe even, firing a lot of prosecutors. My question is, I'm forced to operate in a county court. I've been trying to postpone
that's,
it.
That's the case I'm familiar with, correct?
Yes. So my question, and I had to go to court today, and it's been pushed to the 12th it's been postponed. The trial that was supposed to happen has been pushed to the 12th. I don't think that's a final trial, but it's, inexorably moving. So my question is, let's say things do transition, the federal courts do transition even as early as January, February. What does that mean as far as trickling down to the state and county level?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. The consciousness of people concerning the New World Order and people, a lot of people really still don't realize how the New World Order plays in all this. They hear about the deep state, they become aware of that. So, people have become conscious of this, a lot of people. And, if I'm interpreting it right, maybe 65 to 70% of the people have been woken up and to realize there's some major serious problems with our government. You got probably 15% of the people that are just totally just brain dead. That's all, just brain dead. I used to not think it was that high, but it clearly is at least 15%. And then you have a lot of people who just aren't paying attention at all. Okay, and there's a game going on where they deflect. The Democrats really has been the party that has been pushing forward the New World Order's agenda, and then of course the rhinos in the Republican Party, which is actually really Democrats. That's who they really are, and they're there to make sure when it's necessary to trip this whole system up. Like there's three or four of them doing that right now in Congress. They try to prevent a lot of the appointments from going through. But all that, okay, again, people are becoming conscious of that. It's becoming aware. And so people are paying attention to this. And I do think, I don't know that the judges at this point are paying close enough attention yet. Maybe they are, but I don't think so. You know, they're lost in their own little world also. But they are true believers in the civil law. They truly believe that the common law has been abrogated. They truly believe that it's even possible to happen. And why would they believe that? Because they don't understand really where common law comes from. They think common law comes from Roman law, and they think common law is really comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, which is really trial court decisions, which is no law at all. It has nothing to do with anything, okay? But that's how the whole game is played there. So when or how long is it going to take for this trickle down into the state level? Well, a lot of that, I think, is going to depend on how many people that are really learning this stuff, trying to figure this stuff out, and bringing the challenges properly into the court and moving it to federal court. Because once a federal court slaps down a judge on the lower level and shatters their entire world on reality that they think things the way things are, then that's when change is going to start to happen on the state level. We have to win on the federal level. By winning on the federal level, we then can force the state level to be obedient because we can keep pulling them into federal court for cause. And it only takes one time for a judge to be pulled into federal court on a state level. And I think most of the judges in that state, or at least within the district of that particular judge, will feel the repercussions of what happens when the judge gets slapped down, so to speak, by the federal court. But how long is it going to take? I don't know. But it takes, as far as an individual who's learning the law, understanding the due process, working through that process, and practicing it, and practicing their writing. You practice writing by reading. And whenever I write a paper, you know, maybe I'll write a paper that's 5 or 6 pages or 10 pages, whatever it is. It might take me, you know, a day or so to write the paper, okay? But it'll take a week or two to perfect the paper. Because I will go through that. I'll read that paper over and over and over again. I'll look to change words within every sentence. Try to find a way to say something that means more but says less. You know, so less words but more impact. And going into, you know, I'm always working inside of my Black's Law, and I save what's called, and I offer a lot of them. My footnotes is up in the course, as a matter of fact. I think I even have the footnotes up on the law page, too, where you can download my footnotes. Because I've been collecting footnotes and just giving it, you know, a label, you know, and so I'm able to find these things very quickly. But I'm always working through Black's Law. So the question that you're really asking here is this, you know, how long before the state's going to become obedient? And it depends on the impact of the... Look, I think that what happens on the federal level, on the United States Supreme Court, first of all, you have the Brunson case, okay? Right. And the Brunson case is extremely powerful because these judges on the federal level and probably on the state level and everywhere else, they don't have their oaths of office, which means they don't have the power and the authority to do it. They're gone. They're gone. I think that's part of the thing that... you know, Trump is looking at, and they're not talking much about it, but I think that's one of the strategies. They're going to get rid of a lot of judges real quick. We do know he said that he's going to get rid of the prosecutors across the board. All the federal prosecutors got to go, you know, the attorneys. Now, so I think when that all this happens, which should be by the end of January, and could be even before that, even early January or maybe even December. I don't know when it's going to happen, when all of this stuff is going to come out. And then, of course, there's the papers that we sent in to the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury to move our courts back, the courts of justice again. And I do think that has some weight right now because we haven't had the return of papers. And again, it's been 6 weeks, so it's very interesting. So I think there's going to be such a big change on the federal level, it's going to wake up all the state courts, state judges. So I think it's going to happen quickly.
Okay.
That's my assumption.
I'm having reverberation, so I don't know if you're hearing that. But so you're kind of hopeful that it might happen almost concurrently with the federal?
I think rather quickly, because there's going to be a change in what the law is. Okay. Look at courts. One of the things that our paper is, okay, the Brunsons were looking mostly focused, so it seems, and I haven't read through their papers, but I've got the gist of them. Their case is basically on the fact that these people don't have, oaths of office. Okay?
Right. So they're illegitimate. Well, just based on that, they're illegitimate.
Right. Our paper is about getting our court of laws open, to open the doors of justice again, to stop charging people for money for things that they've already paid for, and it's a right. You can't charge me to exercise a right to go into a court to get my due process. You can't do that. That's unlawful. That's unconstitutional. It's a denial of due process. It's an obstacle. It prevents me from going forward and causes problems. The law, their rules, the same thing, causes problems, okay? So it's so dramatic what we're trying to do. 21 points, and the rules are one of those 21 points. The rules got to go. Even equity, when you look at equity is also has to follow the rules of common law, okay? It's the law of common sense. And so equity is governed to some degree by American jurisprudence, which is lawful decisions by the United States Supreme Court and other state courts, Supreme Courts, the state Supreme Courts. Anything that is lawful, not in conflict with the Constitution, that a lot of that can become or could be considered American jurisprudence. And, of course, American jurisprudence has already been, there's a book out, the second, I think, second edition right now, American Jurisprudence. But now they've added a lot of stuff to that that's unlawful. They put a lot of civil law stuff all around that. And I don't know how much they bastardized the actual focus on, the law itself. But nevertheless, I think it's going to be such a big impact. And again, if the changes are made quickly up on the federal level, which I think they got to be, because we're going back to the Constitution,
The problem though, I think, is that the way it seems is that states seem to have a lot of authority, and they're supposed to be. The states seem to have a lot of authority outside of, not incongruent with the Constitution, but they have a lot of authority to make their own legislation supposedly in line with the Constitution. So that's like, for instance, the Trump allowed abortion to return to state control, et cetera. So in other words, what I'm getting to is, yes, the federal stuff could be changed, but some states can resist cooperating or conforming, especially states like New York or California, because they want to maintain their independence.
Only in equity, not in law. Remember, law is not written. All that law that's written that they apply upon the people is called civil law. And they open up civil courts or criminal courts. Has nothing to do with courts of law. A court of law is a court that proceeds according to the common law. It's called a court of record. Now, when they write the this thing on abortion, they really can't they can't write the law against the person who's going in for the abortion, but they can control the commercial activity, and that's what the law is written for. But the law can be applied for murder against the individual who is pursuing the abortion, because it is murder, okay?
Right.
I know that's a hard thing for some people to hear, but the closer people are to God and the Word of God and following the heart of what's right and wrong, it becomes very clear what it is. People just are not facing up to that, unfortunately.
Okay, so but my point, let me just simplify this. Because of the right or wrong separation of states to make their own decisions, will that be a reason for them to resist conforming to the federal changes?
Well, let's look at it this way. When a Well, first of all, the federal changes are just not participating with them anymore. So, but you could probably make a case and bring it up to the right of life, up on behalf of a child that's in the womb, and make the argument on the federal level, and potentially, you know, again, you know, it's difficult for people to accept certain things, especially when we've been living a certain way for all of our lives, or most of our lives. I know the abortion level, but the abortion thing, an argument came up. I remember when I was young, I think it was in the 70s, early 70s, late 60s, if I recall. But, you know, but I remember hearing about it, and there was a lot of arguments going on, debating about it. In any event, that Roe versus Wade, that's, you know, put the nail in the coffin for injustice, I mean, for justice. I mean, it closed down the doors of justice for that. The bottom line is this, a state that decides that they permit abortion, okay, it doesn't make it right.
No, I know, but I'm getting back to the idea that, you know, like if we're fighting something in courts, because that's what, you know, what we're talking about here, and we're saying, oh, you know, thank God, we're getting close to a real shift spearheaded by Trump, but that's going to be initially on a federal level. And I was just using the abortion as an example of how states do have some justified, or at least appear to have a justified separation or independence from the federal direction. And, you know, how much that might impact any changes that can assist us fighting on a county or state level.
Well, what's coming up is going to be a paradigm shift on so many levels, so many levels. You got to be living under a rock to miss this. And about, as I mentioned earlier, 10-15% of people are living under a rock. Okay, but other than that, I mean, there's a paradigm. But even those people will hear, you know, they'll be affected by it. They will hear it. Whether they're interested in thinking about it is another question, okay? But there's going to be a paradigm shift, okay? And life on the other side of things, which, again, January 20th, maybe before, but life on that other side of things is just going to change so radically for the good. Again, I think it's going to wake everybody up, and I got to believe the judges on the state level are going to wake up. They're going to know. Okay, they're going to know.
So if something were to be decided for myself or someone in, you know, traffic or whatever in the next month or two, and it misses, it's just a little shy of any significant change.
Mm-hmm.
We screwed?
Not at all. I don't even know how many cases I have. I have to sit down one day and count them over the past 15, 20 years. You know, our one case is all about getting courts of law back. I mean, that of course, is what National Liberty Alliance has been working with to teach and also to really put together the unified United States common law grand jury in such a way that they can't deny its authenticity and the fact that it's not just a couple of people in a corner of one state. No, this is nationwide in every single state of this union. And but what that's working on is to bring courts of justice back. So we've got lots of cases that we've attached to that, hundreds of cases, and we do have a couple more cases that have come in recently that'll be attached in the sense that they have the opportunity to resurrect their cases, okay? So I have a lot of cases, and I don't know how many of them I want to resurrect, but the bottom line is I can take every one of them and resurrect them and bring them back because I have been denied due process all this time
in every single
one of my cases. And there is no such thing as a statute of limitation because there are no statutes in common law. That's a key thing that people must understand. There are no statutes in common law, which means there's civil law, there's commercial law, any kind of a law that they write, this, that, or the other, they can't apply upon me, okay? Now, I'm under the common law, you know? Murder is wrong, okay? The taking a life of another person is wrong.
Right.
And so, you know, it becomes a thing, a spiritual thing, in the sense that, you know, when God speaks about people in the womb, and he speaks about people before they're even born as being people, existing.
Absolutely.
That's a whole different mindset now about abortion. It's a whole different thing now, okay, in the mind of the person that has come to that understanding. Now, okay. The other person that might be in a debatable mode and listening to different sides and gets confused, and then it becomes a convenience for them because maybe right. They just want to deal with the responsibility of a child and go through the process of delivery or whatever the case may be, you know, well, they're just convincing themselves of something. But I've heard of a lot of cases, not personally, but of people who have gone through abortions and years later are just so upset about the fact that they did it.
Oh, absolutely. So let me, in the interest of time, let me ask my follow-up quickly, hopefully, follow-up questions. Two things. One, how, you know, I've heard, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about 10 days of darkness and the emergency broadcast, something, and how imminently that seems to be. How will that affect two things? One, the judicial system, and two, the economic system. And my follow-up with that is someone told me today, and I don't remember the name of the person, but there's someone that Trump appointed in some financial capacity who used to work for Soros, and something else about him that didn't sound very promising. I don't remember his name. So my two questions are the 10 days, how that might affect the judicial and the economic, and this other appointment. And again, maybe that's not enough information for you to know who I'm talking about. I'll have to find out.
Well, as far as the appointment is concerned and something like that, who knows? Maybe they're converted. You know, look at, as a Christian, we become right with God through repentance and we become converted. Okay, we now have a different change of mindset, a different understanding of our error and so on and so forth.
Yes.
And anybody that's a real Christian has gone through that in their life anyway. But the same thing in anything else. And maybe there's someone on the enemy's side that converts over. Okay, look at how strong position that Kennedy had concerning the Democratic Party, and think of how long it took for him to actually leave it. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I gotta believe in his heart and in his mind. It's like every day it's like Christmas for him, because he's starting to realize that on the Republican side of thing, not at the Republican Party, but at least let's say the Trump's Republican Party, in the sense that he has changed things over to get back to the Constitution. That's what we can all agree upon, and I gotta believe. There's a lot of big changes coming in his mind. We can see it also in Musk. I mean, you know, I've listened and heard certain things about Musk, and I'm seeing his reactions are different because they're all growing. They're all changing. They're all coming to realization, coming to correction. And I think that's what's going to happen. Now, the 10 days is just kind of a number. The point is that they claim, you know, the military is claiming that they're going to be able to clean things up in about 10 days. It could take 20 days. It could take 8 days. It could take 5 days. Well, what are they cleaning up? What's going on? Brace for him back. I don't know exactly what's going to go on, but I do believe, just like we've been watching over in Europe and various places, there's going to be all kinds of hell breaking loose in the cities. Okay? And I think, I don't know. I can only guess. Okay? And so I don't want to guess, but there's going to be a time period where everything's going to stop. So I think, court case, a lot of things are going to stop for a period of time because of so much. It's going to look like a revolution in the streets, a civil war in the streets, it's going to look like, to some degree. But, you know, those of us who've been listening are informed to stay out of it, you know, and not get involved in that. Let the military go do its job. Of course, you lock and load for anyone breaking down your door. Other than that, just stay out of it. So, I've been telling people for a long time, there's a lot of people saying the same thing. You know, you should have at least 30 days of food in your house. People should be putting things away every day for that time period because, you know, there's going to be a lot of disruption, I think. Now,
how might it affect the courts?
Well, I think a lot of things may just close down for a while as far as being, I don't know, for, again, depending on where the courts are, definitely the cities would be in great havoc. I think that there's just going to be a lot of, maybe with the courts, it's probably going to, during that time period, there may be situations where they're kind of just pushing the dates of the hearings further away. Or what, I really don't know. It's a guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but what I mean is, like, I mean, yes, so obviously if they can't hold court, they'll push them out, but will it just go back to the way it was with just new dates, or will it actually...
Well, again, what's going to happen at that, look at it, what's going to change the things in the courts is what's going to happen on the Supreme Court level. And I do believe to move back to the Constitution is going to be so radical in the minds of people because they don't really understand what true liberty is. They really don't. They don't understand they've been living in a statutory prison for a very long time. They don't understand that they've been enslaved and they're really, you know, they kill themselves working just to survive. And it's been even worse today than it was 5 years ago and 10 years before that and so on and so forth. It's just gotten worse and worse and worse. They've robbed our money. They tax us to death. They keep us sick, and the people have no idea the poisoned air, the poisoned water, the poisoned food, the pharmaceuticals, the destruction on the body, the denial of the good things that will heal you. I mean, our bodies can heal itself in most cases. You just have to get the right thing, the vitamins, the supplements, and eat good food, stay away from the processed food as much as possible. And, you know, it's just a matter of things. I mean, the changes in food, the changes in health, of course that's going to take a little time, the changes in our money system, the changes in taxing, the changes in the courts, it's just, it's going to be a whole new world. It's going to be amazing, anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just wondering if that 10 days or, you know, whatever that period ends up being, if immediately after that there'll be... A lot of change.
Yeah. Well, there is going to be. Listen, I got to move to the last caller, and hopefully
right.
I have a few minutes to play a very short video, but we'll see. But and we could talk some more anyway, and we'll be talking about other things anyway after the holiday. But
fair enough. Okay, thank you.
Right, and I think you're going to be interested in the paper that I'm writing right now. Do you be able to use that paper? So
I look forward to it.
All right. We'll talk later. All right, Ross, you got the mic. Last caller. And I want to put a short video. Hopefully, we have time. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Ross. Go ahead.
Okay. Should I submit an affidavit of lies?
You're breaking up too much. Try it one more time. I'm not getting you right now. Try it again, because you're breaking up.
You hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Should I do an affidavit of lies and get it notarized?
All right, should you do an affidavit and get it notarized? Is that what you're saying?
No, an affidavit of lies.
An affidavit of life?
Yes.
And for what purpose are you thinking?
I want to do it under the natural law.
Say that again, under the what?
Natural law.
Under the natural law.
Yes.
Well, I don't understand the purpose of what you'd write it for. I mean, I wouldn't want to say no, but are you going to be using this for a purpose?
You have to write a purpose in the thing, and you have to claim it. Came it through the Declaration of Independence.
The Declaration of Independence?
Yes.
The right to life, and it's not only that, of course, it's also in the Constitution itself, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and so on.
Yes.
Now, what do you want to do an affidavit for? For what purpose? To file somewhere?
Yeah, miscellaneous order, just in the court, in case I do want to go to court and challenge jurisdiction.
To write a paper for the purpose of a potential future problem that may come about, actually it's a good thing to do, not only to be prepared if you think there's a problem coming up, but also to learn, because if you're going to practice, if you're going to study the court system, you're going to study due process, and of course we have the course Court Access and the Common Law, so anybody taking that, of course, writing papers just for the purpose of having them for potential future, and then looking at them maybe a month down the line after you've written it, because as you grow, your writing's going to grow, and the more you write, even though you're not filing it in court, the more you write, the better you get at your writing, and the more understanding, the better the mindset, the better correction, finding better words, better phrases, better ways to say things, better ways to order things in order, and so on. So yeah, that sounds like a good idea, and it's good exercise for the knowledge of common law.
Yeah, John. It's just the problem. Certain disability I have, the intellectual disability with autism, it's hard for me to write.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. I don't understand enough about autism. I mean, you seem to articulate to yourself well enough, I don't think you have and again, I'm not a doctor either, but I think yours is more milder than a lot of people. Some people with autism, I mean, they really,
barely... Yeah, the extreme end of it, yes.
Yeah, but you seem to do rather well, so... I would try to have more faith in yourself and just start writing, see how it works. And look at, when I started writing and I look at the papers that I've written many years ago, okay, and I look at it and I see, wow, what a difference and change in mindset, understanding, and maturity. And how did I get to the more maturity and a better mindset? I did it by writing. That's the key. So writing is a good thing. It helps you to become a better person. It puts your mind in order, and so on. So
yeah,
I would do
that. It's just, that's how your brain learns. And it also makes it more concrete in your mind.
I'm not sure I got all that, but it makes it more of a creative mind, is what you're saying?
No, I said more concrete in your mind.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you just articulate verbally, it doesn't stay in your mind as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, yes, look at when you think about something, you read something, you articulate it, and you write it, each one of those different ways of looking and doing something reinforces it in your brain. And that's another thing that I do when I write. I sometimes, at the end of the day, I read it out loud. Most of the time I'm reading it to myself. But when you read it out loud, it's a big difference because, what happens is you'll have errors that you have when you write and you're reading it in your mind that you keep hitting the same error and passing by and not catching it. But when you read it out loud, articulating it, then all of a sudden that jumps out on you and you see the awkwardness of something or whatever the case may be. Maybe you missed a few words that you think is in there and it's not in there, but reading it out loud helps you see that. So, yeah, different ways that you look at this, it embeds stronger into your brain.
I use Grammarly AI.
I missed that. Try it again.
Grammarly AI.
Oh, the AI? Yeah, are you talking about AI, artificial intelligence?
No, I refer to, website called Grammarly.com?
Yeah, I'm not familiar, so I don't know.
Grammarly.com just updated their website to an AI version of Grammarly.
Yeah, this AI, I think, is a dangerous thing in many ways. I mean, we're all familiar with some of the potential dangers of AI, but it also is robbing us of our thinking. It's robbing us of our creativity. It's robbing us because we're going to become, especially the kids growing up, I hear that kids are putting more time into the AI than they are into school, and that's not necessarily a good thing. Okay. And but the thing is then they rest on the AI in order to maybe write a paper for them or do different things. And you're being robbed of your own mind. So AI is dangerous in so many ways, so many ways.
Grammarly AI is more about helping you edit your papers, not actually write it for you.
Can I add some to that, John?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've been working with the AI, and the current algorithms are just mathematical formulas, and it just says, well, what's the next word supposed to be? And it does a pretty good job, but I wouldn't get into it real deep. Every time you use the AI to find something or write something for you, you, like John said, you didn't have that experience. And so the growth that your brain could have had, you don't get. You're relying upon the AI.
Yeah, it's like a crutch.
Yeah, it is a crutch.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. All right, well, we got to end it, Ross. Anything final before we close down?
That's it.
Huh?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. You know, before we close down, I want to play a couple-of-minute video. I put it up on our front page, but I think I may move it off the front page because maybe it's inappropriate. I'm not too sure. But when I saw this video, it just put me on the floor laughing. I couldn't believe. Well done, very well done. So I'm going to play this to close off, and we'll close off after this video. And like I said, it's only a few minutes long. So here it goes.
Are you distraught after the recent presidential election? Here at Don't Cry Cryo, we understand your pain, and we're here to help. Our expert team of cryogenic care providers can cryogenically freeze you until the Trump presidency has ended. No more crying, no more anxiety attacks, just blissful sleep until Trump is gone. When you awaken from your slumber, we'll even have a party ready and waiting for you. It will be like his presidency never even happened. It was all just a bad dream. As an added bonus, you can choose the Vance add-on package. We'll extend your sleep for an additional 4 years at a 50% discount in the event J.D. Vance wins the next presidential election. Everything will be okay. We're here to take care of you in your time of need. So remember, don't cry, cryo.
Wait for it.
Where am I? Oh, please tell me it's over. Wait, something isn't right.
This is your captain, Elon Musk. I want to be the first one to welcome you to Mars.
No!
Sorry, Donald Trump Jr. was just elected president, and he deported all Don't Cry Cryo customers to Mars.
What the...
Well, good night, everybody.
A lot of that was generated by AI.
Probably was. All right, well, we'll see you next Monday. Thanks for everybody coming. Good night.